Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the game from Wednesday night. Reds and Mariners, game 2 of 3 out in Seattle. And Hunter Green got the start for the Reds. He got through 4 innings. He allowed just 1 run and struck out 8, but it did take him 98 pitches to get through those 4 innings. Green went 1-2-3 in the first inning, but needed 20 pitches to get through that inning. In the third inning, the Mariners fouled 12 pitches off him in that inning alone, but the score was still nothing-nothing going into the fourth. The Mariners finally got a run off Hunter Green on an RBI double by Jonathan Clase. The Reds almost turned a miraculous relay when Stuart Fairchild made a great play in center field, getting to the ball quickly, then firing a strike to Ellie De La Cruz, who turned and fired home, but Luke Maley was unable to hang on to the ball on a tough play. So 1-0 Mariners there. Hunter Green's final line on the day would be 4 innings pitched, 4 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts. This was start number 50 in his career for Hunter Green. Green smashed the record for the Reds' most strikeouts through their first 50 starts. Green with 341. Previous mark was set by Mario Soto with 310. Mariners starting pitcher Logan Gilbert had faced the minimum through the first 4, but the Reds tied it up in the 5th inning when Spencer Steer singled. He was then out on a Jake Fraley fielder's choice, but Ellie De La Cruz singled, stole a second base, and then Stuart Fairchild had an RBI ground out that tied the game. Emilio Pagan came in to relieve Green. He ended up walking in a run in the bottom of the 5th, but Justin Wilson was able to get him out of that jam. Fernando Cruz gave up a run in the 6th that made it 3-1 Mariners, and then Julio Rodriguez really broke the Reds' heart in the 7th inning. First, he robbed Steer of extra bases on a ball smoked out to center field. The Reds tried to get a 2-out rally cooking in the 7th inning. Jake Fraley walked. Finally, that got Logan Gilbert out of the game. Ellie De La Cruz drew a walk off Seattle relief ace Andrus Munoz. That brought in Nick Martini to pinch hit. Martini smoked the ball to center field. It looked like it was going to be a 3-2 game, but Ellie De La Cruz got thrown out at third base, and he got thrown out, unfortunately, before Jake Fraley scored, and the game stayed tied at 3-1. Brett Suter, he threw 2 shutout innings to give the Reds a chance late in this one, and the Reds did somehow load the bases with 2 outs in the top of the 9th on walks from Will Benson and Ellie De La Cruz. Jake Fraley also reached on an error, but pinch hitter Tyler Stevenson flied out to end the game. Reds fall 3-1. Reds now 9-8 on the season, and the Reds are now just 2-9 all-time in Seattle. Here's what Hunter Green had to say about his good but short start on Tuesday night.
We talked about this before, but a lot of 3-ball counts again did you in. Just obviously couldn't go as far in the game as you'd like.
Yeah, just too many, way too many pitches. My slider obviously wasn't great today. Usually that's a pitch where I can get back in account, put guys away. I got some swing and miss, but not enough to obviously be effective. But got to be better for the bullpen. Those guys are grinding. They're coming in big moments like Willie and getting it done, and so just got to be better.
Is there anything at all in there to build on?
Obviously a lot of strikeouts, and I'd rather be going deeper into games, and taking that less strikeouts for deeper in the game. So I just got to keep working. I actually started feeling better in that last inning. My body started to feel looser, which is crazy because I was approaching 100 pitches, but I wanted to go back out there, but obviously I'd reached a high pitch count. So just got to keep going, and that's all I could do.
How do you refine the slider? I mean, this is a tough game. It's a tough thing to do, but other than continuing to be stubborn and throwing it during games, how can you refine it better?
I think my answer is really just being able to lock it in the bullpen. And that can be funny too, because you can have a bad bullpen and go out and absolutely shove. So, but I think that's a big key for me, is being able to get the shape locked in pretty early on, whether it's catch play or in the bullpen, and then be able to replicate that as I go out and I pitch in the actual game. You know, the pitch isn't always going to be the same, but I need to be able to find more consistency in that pitch because, you know, trying to pitch with one pitch. I mean, I'm not pitching with one pitch. I would still have to throw some curveballs and some good splitters in there, but that slider just needs to be on 100% of the time, or if at least not, you know, it needs to be 90% or so. So,
Mariner hitters been what you expected coming in, or have they done anything different from what you guys saw in the scouting reports?
No. I mean, obviously, it's a big league club. I know they're going through a rough patch, but you know, they're still great hitters over there. And
here's Reds manager David Bell.
Ninth inning, they're kind of a microcosm of the night. You just couldn't come up with clutch hits and missed opportunities out there.
I thought there was a lot of fight there in the ninth. Some great at-bats, really great at-bats on close pitches. Then we fought back off Munoz and gave ourselves a chance to win right there. But, yeah, we came up short. Their guy was really good. Their starting pitcher was excellent. Hunter was good. I thought he had good stuff. Just too many foul balls, you know, a lot of pitches in four innings, so... Wasn't for that, could have been a different night for Hunter, but yeah, we came up short in the end.
For Hunter, we continue to talk about three ball counts and high pitch counts and foul balls. How, in your experience, how can he get over that hump of pitching?
He just has to keep doing what he's doing. He has to continue to work, and you know, sometimes you gotta give their hitters credit. I think both nights, we played them two nights now, they've done a really good job of controlling the strike zone and making us throw the ball over the plate, grinding out at bats similar to what we do. So we know how to make it tough on opposing pitchers too. And I think the last couple of nights, that's what happened on the other side. So Hunter, main thing is he can't try to do too much now. You know, he's got to stay with what he's doing and continue to trust himself and keep making pitches.
Rodriguez made some two really good plays in the inning there. If we were talking about a mere mortal human, Ellie, are you okay with him running first to third then?
Yeah, that's why Rodriguez is one of the best players in the game. I mean, he was a little bit on his heels. In some ways, we thought it was an ill-advised throw. To be honest, because of Ellie's running, and he's just so fast. So for him to be able to throw Ellie out there was a bit of a surprise to us. But yeah, we have to continue to play hard, continue to run, take the extra bases. Big part of our game. When teams make plays like that, we can't let that stop us. So I think that whole play was about Rodriguez and a really special throw.
All right, for our deep drive of the game, it was the big outfield in Seattle and Julio Rodriguez. They were a tough combo for the Reds on Tuesday night. Christian Encarnacion, Strand, and Spencer Steer each had balls hit exactly 388 feet, but they were just loud out. So we'll call those our deep drive of the game. Our deep drive of the game sponsored, as always, by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. The Brewers, they lost 6-3 to the Padres. Brewers have now lost three in a row. Pirates fell 3-1 to the Mets. Pirates just 2-5 in their last seven after their incredibly hot start. The Cubs, they lost 12-11 to the Diamondbacks. Cubs blew a three-run lead late, and they ended up losing in extra innings. Cardinals, the only NL Central team to get a win on Tuesday night. They won 3-2 over the Athletics. So your NL Central standings on Wednesday morning. Brewers sit at 10-6, Pirates 11-7, Cubs 10-7, Reds 9-8, Cardinals are 9-9. All right, well, here's myself and Trace Fowler late on Tuesday. It might have been Wednesday morning when we started. I'm not 100% sure, but nonetheless, here was our post-game reaction on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube.
All right, Nick, we got another late-night edition of Chatterbox Reds, another unfortunate losing edition as well. Reds fall 3-1 to the Seattle Mariners. For the second straight day, they find themselves on the losing end. They're going to have to find a way to get a win on getaway day, or else they're going to give back the sweep they just obtained in Chicago tomorrow to the hands of the Mariners. Nick, there's a good amount of things to talk about. I really do think that. I think that there's actually some substance to this show. I think that there's, ultimately, when you get to do a show every single night, there are nights, Nick, where I think you just try to stretch. You get yourself in spots where you're trying to dig out some type of content. I don't think tonight's the night. I think tonight, you know, we got some stuff to talk about. We'll obviously get into all that and more in just a moment. And first and foremost, we should do Hunter Green. Hunter Green, he threw 265 pitches. That's what X.com told me. He got through four innings of work. And then David Bell went to him in the dugout and said, "Hey, brother, you can't throw 700 pitches and expect me to keep you in after four innings." And he's like, "No, I want to stay in. I think I can get to 300. And unfortunately, David Bell didn't allow him to do that, probably because David Bell would like to see Hunter Green stay healthy for the rest of the year. And you know what? I'm going to say something positive. Hunter Green's still healthy. Hunter Green's still healthy, and I like that. Nick, I'll kind of give you the floor here. You can kind of calm the room. Everybody can relax a little bit now. But your overall thoughts, I guess, of not just maybe the 30,000 feet view of the game, maybe some takeaways, but more importantly, Hunter Green.
Yeah, I mean, look, you'd like to see Hunter be able to get you a little more than four innings, but the four innings that he gave you tonight, he battled as hard as he possibly could through them. Got to give credit to the Mariners. They did it to Frankie Montas last night. They did it to Hunter Green tonight. They fouled up a lot of pitches. They extended their at-bats. Hunter, obviously, he struck out eight batters in four innings. Obviously, he had some pretty good stuff. Wasn't able to land his curveball. Only was able to throw once for a strike. Splitter was only able to throw twice for a strike. In fact, he actually hit a batter with his curveball. So I think he's still working on those other pitches. You hope that as he develops those other pitches, he is able to limit his pitch count a little bit more. But, I mean, this was the kind of game where there was clearly not a lot of margin for error. You could see it when you were watching Logan Gilbert. He looked as good as any pitcher I've seen over the first couple innings of this game. And Hunter had to match him, and he was able to do that. I think Charlie Goldsmith tweeted out, most strikeouts in Reds history through his first 50 starts. Just you have to remember he's the youngest pitcher on this staff, and he's still developing. It's good to see him have some success while he's still developing. But I have all the confidence in the world that he's going to get there.
I'm glad you have all the confidence in the world. I'm not suggesting that I'm out on Hunter Green by any stretch of the imagination. Before I say what I'm going to say, I do think that there's this notion though that he's gonna certainly get better. I'm just waiting for him to progress to start to show the signs that he's done something of some semblance that has made himself become a better pitcher. Because I think he's serviceable, certainly. But what he was at the end of last season to what he is now, still seems like he's similar. You know, it still feels the same. And I guess as we move forward here in the rundown, I don't know what it is that he needs to do to stop the whole fouling balls off. And I see both sides of this. But, you know, I know many people think that obviously maybe from time to time I overreact and I do all these things. But I try to look at these games from a rational perspective and think, okay, what is it that should be concerning? I don't know how concerned I am from the standpoint that when you throw strikes, guys are fouling pitches off, how overly concerned I get. But I do wonder, what is it going to take for him to get out of this situation that is he finds himself in the fourth and fifth inning sometimes, hovering around that 100 pitch mark. And I'm not suggesting that it's all his fault or he's the one that, you know, that's to blame for this. It's almost like he's caught between two really tough spots right now. One is his stuff is too good from the standpoint that guys can't square him up and put the ball in play, but his stuff isn't consistently good enough to get guys to swing and miss more times than not. He has swing and miss stuff. That's where people, like, I don't understand where people are like, well, he just doesn't have an out pitch, or he doesn't have a swing and miss pitch. Dude strikes out a lot of guys. I mean, dude strikes out a lot of guys. The only thing I would push back on in saying that is, like, I don't think he has the strikeout, or whatever term you want to come up with, I could care less. I'll call it swing and miss. I don't know if he has the swing and miss fastball and or the split that he doesn't really throw, but obviously the slider that he does. I don't think it's there consistent enough to kind of allow him to breeze through some games. What I mean by that is that I don't know if he can locate his fastball in specific spots on command time and time and time again to where he could set hitters up. And I'm not suggesting that he can't do it from time to time. I'm just talking consistently. And if you can't set hitters up, if you can't hit the top, let's call it the top left-hand corner of the zone and then follow that up with a slider that hits the bottom right-hand corner of the zone, well, it's why you get pitches fouled off time and time again. So do I think he can get better at that? Yes. But I'm waiting for that. And I don't know if that's automatically going to come. Would a third pitch be great, Nick? Yeah, third pitch would be great. Of course it would be. But I think, honestly, the two pitches he has are good enough if he consistently throws the ball where he's trying to throw it. And again, I'm not suggesting, just because, I guess my point is, Nick, if you don't walk guys, that doesn't mean that you had great command. And maybe I would say vice versa, to where if you get in a spot to where maybe you walk a few guys, it doesn't mean that your command's horrible. A lot of it depends on what you are able to do inside of a sequence to each and every hitter. And right now, I don't think that, unfortunately, Hunter Green can consistently execute pitch sequences that gets guys out quickly.
Well, Hunter Green has two pitches that he never threw before this year, the curveball and the split finger. He never thrown either one of those. Those are two brand new pitches. I mean, it's going to take time to, develop those pitches to be able to command them. It feels like...
Well, when's he going to throw it?
He threw him tonight.
What's his pitch? What's his ratio?
Tonight he threw the fastball, four-seam fastball, 54 times. He threw the curveball 3 times. He threw the splitter 5 times and the slider 36 times.
Yeah, so he threw eight pitches total of those two other pitches. Go ahead.
It was pretty clear he didn't have command on it. Like he hit a batter with his curveball. So like he's trying to work through those pitches. If you don't have it, you can't throw it though. If you're not feeling your curveball, you have to try to grind through 4 innings with your fastball and your slider like he did tonight.
I agree with that. The only pushback that I would say that people have a rightful complaint about is that you really don't have those pitches if you can't use them. Like, just because you say you can throw a splitter, or just put it this way, just because you said you added a splitter and just because you say you added a curveball, if you can't rely on them when it means something, then you really don't have them. So
sure.
He's going to have to, and I get what you're saying. He's young. Like, this isn't like a pour on Hunter Green. What I'm saying isn't a pour on Hunter Green. I think people are looking for reasons as to why this continues to happen. And I think that I think it's a little unlucky in his sense that he's actually good enough to where guys can't put the ball in play on him. Because his stuff's that good, but unfortunately, he's not gotten to that over that proverbial hump yet to where he's able to kind of get guys out with different sequences and different pitches because he relies on his fastball and relies on his slider. Simple as that.
Yeah, but he's only had 4 games with these new pitches, like 4 games that actually count so far.
And I think what would you say back to someone that would then, if you said that, like, what would you say back? Like, what are they doing all offseason? I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm just saying, like, what?
I'm sure they were doing everything they can to make sure those pitches were as good as they could be on opening day, but it's not going to just happen overnight. You don't start throwing a curveball and typically, oh man, first game out, boy, that curveball's, I can command it exactly how I want.
Well, I mean, I will say this. Fernando Cruz picked up a splitter, and it's his best pitch now.
But Fernando Cruz also wasn't, like, he also, I don't know, how long did he throw that in the minor leagues?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, at some point, we'll figure it out.
Minor league games. The one thing I would say to Hunter Green, if you are looking for something that I can say that's concrete that I think would maybe be the best thing for him to improve upon, it didn't really feel, Trace, to me at least, like he was getting behind in the count a lot. If just from watching it, but looking at the numbers, he did only throw 12 of the 19 batters that he faced a first pitch strike. So I think if he would maybe throw a first pitch strike, I don't know, maybe get that up to 14 or 15, that might also help just get that pitch count down. But there also is probably some sort of a book out now where teams that are scouting under Green go, hey guys, just go out there and try to foul off that 4-seam fastball as many times as you can. You'll get him out after 4 innings. And that's also going to be something that now is kind of has Hunter working against Hunter right now. Overall, I think he's in a good spot. like the fact that he was able to get through the four innings tonight was great.
That is
the fact
true.
That he only gave up one run. The last start out, he got through six innings, throwing 105 pitches, and he gave up six earned runs and two home runs. So you have to, this is better than that, in my opinion.
It is. Yeah. He gave his team a chance to win, right? I think that's what you want your starter to do more times than not. And it got hairy a couple times. He was one swing away from it looking like a really bad start. But that's not how baseball works. It is what it is. Whatever happens actually happens. You can play hypotheticals all day. I have nothing against the concept that Hunter can get better. I'm just saying that at some point, I just wonder when that line in the sand will come, and I hope it's soon. I guess I'm fearful that the idea that you have all offseason to work on a third pitch, and that was something that you focused on, and we're talking, little to no reliability on that pitch that you've worked on all offseason. Then the concept of if you don't figure it out during the offseason, I have a hard time believing you're going to actually develop it during the regular season. I could be wrong. And then again, then you go into a whole nother year next year. Probably everybody saying, hey, it'd be nice if he developed a third pitch. We'll find out. But listen, it wasn't a bad start by Hunter Green. Again, the Mariners scored three runs in nine innings tonight. Pitching really wasn't a problem. It comes down to offense. Speaking of offense, maybe the thing that most people are going to want to talk about that has nothing to do with hitting per se, which is probably the real issue, is going to be Ellie's making the third out at third base. Jake Fraley not scoring. I know you had mentioned he wasn't hustling. I didn't really get a chance to see the full play there on Fraley, whether he was hustling or not hustling. Maybe Fraley just assumed that there wasn't going to be an out behind him, and that's a reasonable assumption. The more and more I think about this, I think Ellie's just, and you see this all the time with anybody that's super talented, really anywhere in life, right? If you come across somebody that's incredibly talented at something, I hate to say this, but higher level thinking or IQ, baseball IQ, probably would, and again, I'm not saying that he's got bad baseball IQ. I think Ellie's made some really big time plays throughout already his short career. But there needs to be a little more situational awareness. And I know that he's been aggressive. I know Julio Rodriguez made an incredible play. But you just have to know, Nick, that obviously you have the tying run. You are the tying run, and you're going to score from second base. The only caveat, if I can defend Ellie, because I can play both sides of this coin right now, I want to defend Ellie too by saying this. If he does get to third base and they don't make a great play there, I don't remember the name of the guy that was actually throwing the ball for the Mariners, but he was wild. He was struggling with his command a little bit. A ball squeaks away, Ellie scores from third base, then all of a sudden he's a superhero because he took third base and then he got home. So, you can play this both sides of the aisle. The only thing is that you got to know two things in that situation. One, you got to be damn near 100% that you're going to get there. This isn't AAA anymore either. Julio Rodriguez is not, he never seen this, to be fair to him. He's never seen this in the minor leagues, guys throwing the ball like that more times than not. And then the last thing would be, I would have preferred him to kind of read the third baseman and probably take an inside angle to the bag. It kind of looked like he got hung out way out to the right, made it a little bit easier for them to tag him. But I don't know. Your overall thoughts on it? I know it has to do with Ellie, so you're going to probably, you're probably going to shade on the air of caution.
I mean, there's a reason that play is all over social media right now, as a great throw and not classified as a dumb base running play. It was an incredible throw by Julio Rodriguez. That ball gets past the third baseman, goes 5 feet, and Ellie scores. Everyone's talking about how incredible Ellie De La Cruz is right now. So I get the whole never make the third out at third base. But there's so many. Ellie's different than even a fast runner like Stuart Fairchild, or getting the third base. You could get a balk. I mean, how a pitcher having to see Ellie De La Cruz at third base just creates so much havoc. I wish I would have saw a better replay on Fraley, because it definitely feel like he should have scored on that play, and that would have maybe made it, you know, feel a little bit less, although probably in the end it wouldn't have mattered either way.
I'll tell you why I don't know that. Like, let's just play this out hypothetically. Since neither one of us are going to get a chance to see that play, probably more or less. I would love to know if there is like an all 22 type film of baseball. Like, I really would love to see
there it. There is, but us peons don't have access.
That's
to
right. Of course we don't. Yeah. We're not big enough yet. Maybe one day we'll get that. But my point is that Ellie was going from first to third. He got thrown out at third base, which is a shorter throw, right? You'd like to think Fraley's nowhere near as fast as Ellie. I'd venture to say, like, if it's very similar in the length of how far they ran, right? So it's hard to say, like, Fraley was definitely dogging it. That's all I'm going to say. Like, I'm not 100% sure that he was dogging it, but I would venture to say that he wasn't, you know, super loafing, because Ellie got out at third in the very close and similar nature as where Fraley was to get home, and they both went two bases. Not perfect science, but that's my idea.
Yeah, and Jake Fraley's always hustling. Every, like, in that last play in the ninth inning where he, you know. So I don't want to jump to conclusions on Jake Fraley, because I feel like he probably does deserve the benefit of the doubt. What I'm going to say, though, is if you are going to criticize Ellie for this and you're going to be, don't make the third out at that third base, when he does do that and is safe, I want to see everyone saying that was bad on Ellie, even when he is safe, because there's no, it's one way or the other. So you can't say, you know, when it doesn't work, oh, that's bad. But when it works, I want to see everyone online, that was bad by Ellie. That was bad by Ellie. I want every single person in the chat, even when he is safe. And I'm going to keep track of how many runs get scored throughout the year on those type of things.
You should do that. You should start.
That's my bubblegum card.
Yeah, you should do that. You know why? Because I don't know if you watch the game or not, but this is starting to get out of control a little bit. I mean, you might want to give a call down to the old servers down there at Great American Ballpark and start asking some questions. I'm just saying. I don't know how many times it's going to have to happen before somebody just raises their eyebrow and says, "Man, I don't know. This seems to not be working out for us." And not only is it not working out, it's not working out in some big ass situations. I felt really bad for Pagan. He thought he got a double play ball. He turned around and he dropped the biggest F-bomb in the history of Seattle. Rightfully so, by the way. Rightfully so. I couldn't imagine being a pitcher, Emilio Pagan, out there busting my tail trying to get a ground ball. You get a ground ball literally right to the shortstop, or where the shortstop should be, some would say. And it just, they don't turn it. That's here nor there. That's it all. That's all I have for Ellie. I'm not going to crush him, but I'm going to say this. There are certain situations in baseball games where you got to have a little bit of feel. I have no problem in the second inning of a game where you think it might be a high scoring game, Nick. But I also think it's in a low scoring situation. The chances of you getting there might be 50-50 or so. It's not worth the risk. But you know what I'm going to say? That's asking a lot out of a young kid. It is. That's asking a lot out of a young kid. But I, you're in the big leagues. At some point, you put your big boy pants on, and you're gonna have to make big boy decisions. And if it doesn't work out, you're gonna be catching some heat. But I like your bubblegum idea.
He's also a tough guy to shut it on and shut it on, right?
Yes, but that's a mental thing. Like I tend to agree with that. But I also think, and I know he wasn't doing this because I'm gonna be a little bit of a prick right now. In saying that I know for a fact Ellie wasn't doing this, when I don't know. But I have I just think that Ellie's out there free-flowing, having fun, and by all means, it works out 99% of the time. I don't think Ellie, before the pitch is going, is thinking, all right, if this ball gets hit in the left center field gap, I'm the tying run. Julio Rodriguez is in center field. I'm not going to test that arm if it's in front of him. Those are situations that you're thinking through, and I don't know how many guys really do that in the big leagues, but when you're not a good player, when you're really slow and you've had to scrap and claw your whole life to get to wherever you gotten to, those players actually do think through those things. I'd venture to say the Kevin Newmans of the world, although Kevin would never even attempt to go to third because he'd barely get to second. But those are the types of things I'm talking about.
So to sum up this game, the Hunter Green's ability to strike everyone out and Ellie De La Cruz's speed.
It's in a disadvantage.
It's almost like, and I'm not saying that like facetiously.
No, I mean, I think there's some truth in that. Wrong. Yeah. And I would even add in this. I think the throw that Ellie made caused controversy that otherwise would have never existed. I mean, and by the way, I meant this when I said this. I get why everybody oohs and ahs over Ellie, and that's more than fine. But Stuart Fairchild, and that's the type of stuff I'm talking about. Nobody wants to give this kid credit. And he made an unbelievable play just because the Mariners broadcast decided they wanted to cut to the guy rounding third base, and you didn't really get a chance to see the play he made. He caught the ball on the run, spun, made a Hail Mary throw to Ellie, pretty much right on line, by the way. Ellie caught it off a bounce, I think, but still, and I'm not killing Ellie for this. I'm just saying, like, if Ellie would have caught it in the air, maybe it would have been a little bit easier of a play. I think it was crazy to think Maley should have made that play. He was trying to swipe and tag at the same time, but I'm not even debating that tonight. I'm getting past that because I don't think it's that big of a deal. There's really, I would argue that out of that play 1,000 times, that play gets made 3 times. All 3 of those guys had to make unbelievable plays. I say out of 1,000 times, they do it 3 times total. That's how crazy of a play that would have been. And it didn't happen. Yeah. So it is what it is.
And Stewart playing center field in a really, really tough ballpark to play center field. Also, I'll be honest, I'm the biggest Stuart Fairchild fan. I thought he was going to for sure strike out in that at-bat when he had that runner on third base. That's a brutal matchup for him against Logan Gilbert right on right and was able to put the ball in play. Craig actually sent this to me, and this is really going to... I don't know if I want you to watch this.
What?
Bally did show another angle of Jake Fraley coming home.
All right, let's see it.
You don't need to see it. I can describe it to you.
No, I'm gonna lie.
Your boy Santiago Espinal is holding his hands up like you don't like kind of like you come in easy.
Well, to be honest, to be fair to Espinal, he's not on base. He's not on base enough to know. You know. I mean, Espinal doesn't get it. He's not used to running the bases, which is fair. Espinal, just saying.
But that is, but you absolutely. If you look at that, there's no way you can put any blame on Jake Fraley. Now, I don't think it's the worst. Like Espinal's, I guess, maybe saying don't slide, but it's that's tough. That's tough.
And it's a unique situation. How many guys are trying to go first or third there, anyways? And how many guys are fast enough to even give it an attempt? So I think all in all, it's just bad luck. That's not the fun thing to say, but I think that's truthfully what it is. All right, let's do this. We have the Game Time app. I know that many of you have heard me say this time and time again, so I'm going to say it one more time. The Game Time app, please go download it and get your tickets. Download and use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y. Please use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, and that will help us out. It's a good app. You should give it a try if you haven't. All right, we have next on the rundown, Martini. We didn't want to lose sight of this. I think this is more of a kind of like just a little side note that we wanted to say. Martini had a hell of an at bat. Let's not let the fact that the whole Ellie kind of making the third out of third base overshadow, and obviously Fraley not scoring overshadow Martini's at bat. It was a very, very good at bat. So Nick Martini now has come in and had some good looking ABs, and for a guy that we had talked about, you know, how much longer does this guy struggle before you start to question whether or not he should be in the lineup? I'll tell you this, though. I don't want to ruin your Reds MILB, but got a guy down in AAA right now, and I'll tease that. But a guy got down in AAA that's just mashing baseballs again. Kind of reminds me of CES last year. I don't know what we do. Like, I don't know what you do. Got Jonathan Indy in the leadoff spot. People want to talk about that. I mean, I don't know, man. This is, at some point, you start asking the question, how good are we? I don't know if I'm there yet, but, you know, it's a long season. It's a long season. And I guess I'll just add that. Do you think tonight's bad luck? I'll open the floor. Do you think it was just bad luck? Like, they win this game more times than not based off of metrics? But
I don't know if it was, like, necessarily, like, the worst luck I've ever seen in a baseball game by any means. There was several balls. Like you know, CES hit a ball that they actually... Bally did a really good breakdown of it, where they were doing like the temperature and the wind conditions, and any other time it's a home run. Steer also had 3 hard hit balls, absolutely crushed one that Julio Rodriguez made a really nice play on. That I'm still upset about that first pitch to Tyler Stevenson that they called a ball that should have had a 1-0 count. That was tough. So I don't think this was the... I don't know. Logan Gilbert pitched really well. The Mariners also kind of made a lot of their luck because they didn't walk anyone outside of their relievers late in the game, but their starters the last 2 days. It's hard to feel unlucky when you never walk. You know, that's kind of where I'd be at. So, I don't know, a combination of a little bit of bad luck. But on Nick Martini, definitely deserves a lot of credit for that. I mean, that's a really, really good pitcher. And Andres Munoz, one of the better closers in the game that they used earlier in that spot. For him to come up and really, you know, get a pitch and hit it well into the outfield. Yeah, he's a real, real weapon for this team. And I think he's kind of, you know, shut up some of the oh, he's just an opening day, great game, you know, kind of guy. I think he's definitely got a spot on this team.
Yeah, the one last thing I'm going to add about the bad luck stuff, I do think that there's times where, you know, you could use the hard hit ball reference as a very serious, you know, a conversation around, oh, it's just tough luck, hit balls right at guys. There's a whole nother concept in my mind of just guys hitting balls that would have been maybe a home run somewhere else or would have been a hit somewhere else based off of, you know, the ballpark dimensions. That's part of the game. Part of the game. You pitch to your park. I mean, and I'm not suggesting that Gilbert wanted to give up, you know, 388-foot deep drives of the day, but, I mean, ultimately, they're outs. They're outs. Who gives a damn how hard they hit it? If they're outs, I do think it's a good metric to kind of get an idea of whether or not you should overreact to somebody struggling or not struggling, but let's face it, like, if it's a 3-1 count at Great American Ballpark with a runner on first base, you might be a little more apt to try to be a little more selective on where you're going to try to locate the pitch. Sometimes on 3-1 in a big, big ballpark, I don't know, you just take your chances. Let a guy hit a ball. And if he hits it out of the park, you give him his credit. You say, hell, you, it's a good swing. More times than not, though, the ball just, it doesn't go out at places like this.
And the Mariners, to their credit, they had much better at-bats the entire game than the Reds did. Just what they did against Hunter Green. Right. They deserve a lot of credit for how many pitches they fouled off. They were a big part of that equation as to why his pitch count you know, got jacked up so high. But one thing I will say is a positive. I talked about it before these games started, that the two pitchers that the Reds faced in George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, two of the top four pitchers in walk rate. So they don't walk anyone. It was good, though, to see Trace late in the game when the Reds got to even good quality relievers. We kind of saw more of that Reds baseball, that Reds offense that we really love. That grinding out the bats. And that made me think, okay, it was just, that's more on Kirby and Gilbert, not really the Reds having, you know, bad at bats. That's more of the Reds offense that I think we love and that I think can be a playoff team if they're able to do that more often than not throughout the year.
They grinded it out. I agree with that. They had some good at bats towards the end of the game. One thing I don't want us to overlook here really quick, I'm gonna do some super chats in just a moment. Is you know, the Reds dodged some bullets too. Let's not act like Justin Wilson didn't come into the game and save the Reds. I mean, he did. He kept them in the game. Bases loaded situation, gets a strikeout and then gets an out to get out of it. And you know what? If there's a seeing eye single there, there's a bloop double. This game's completely different. We're talking about how the pitching was a problem as well as the hitting, and we're, you know, all down in the dumps. So, you know, I just don't think, again, not that I think that you're suggesting it, but I just think sometimes people look at expected batting average, they look at hard hit balls, and I think that's okay to look at maybe from a holistic view, like a very macro level. But when you're looking at it from a game-to-game perspective, like, I think the Mariners put it this way, I think they deserve to win. I thought they played better than the Reds. Simple as that.
And that's a good point from Nikki Clicky.
That's right.
As to why I'm not going to sit here and be like, yeah, the Reds had terrible luck. With walks, you make your own luck, and the Reds walked a lot of guys the last 2 days. The Mariners didn't. They deserve to win.
I don't know. Do you want to talk about India real fast? I know you have bullpen on there, but I think it's fair to say something about India. I don't really know what people want out of him. I know his batting average isn't good, but he's trying to find ways on base. Is he getting himself? Is this a fair question? Is he doing what Tyler Stevenson did maybe last year, where he's trying to be something that he's not?
Did have two hard hit balls today. 99 and 101. The one was hit straight into the dirt, though, so you kind of put that one with a grain of salt. He did it one pretty well off Gilbert. The last 2 days, I mean, these are brutal matchups if you're a right-handed batter going up against Kirby and Gilbert. These are two of the, I don't know if the Reds will face, and tomorrow too, there's not going to be a stretch all year where the Reds face three straight right-handed pitchers in a row that are this good. So I don't know. It's one of those things where I really liked what Indy was doing earlier in the year when, you know, he's still getting on base a lot. I don't know. I put him on the yellow.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. Here's the. What's the what other options are there? You know, like I don't. That's the part where I just say, you know what, I don't know. You look around, you ask yourself, do you have a better option? And I think the answer is no. I think that's a clear answer, right?
Yeah, and he's still getting on base. So if the other part of the conversation is, do you move him out of the leadoff spot?
Right.
I mean, as bad as he's been, he still has a .333 on base percentage. That's updated through tonight. So he's still getting on base. So
who do you move in the leadoff spot anyways?
You could move Benson up, but then you're making your lineup not as balanced with your right left, which is very, very important for late in games. So you don't have your lineup get exposed. So I'm not too worried overall, but like you said, yeah, there's not really any other place to turn to at this time.
Can I say one thing that nobody can take offense to? We got some bad baseball players on this team. We do. We got a couple bad ones. I thought this was the year where we weren't going to have it, but we do. I don't know. The fact that Espinal is on this team is just, what happened? And I know why we have some bad players on this team. It's because the guys got hurt, and one guy was just basically just ripping up some roids, brother. Like, hey, here's a syringe. Go for it, man. See if that makes your hamstring feel better. Hopefully his hamstring feels better. I don't know, man. It's tough. It's tough. I want to sometimes, some nights like this, just say, you know what, maybe we're just not a very good offensive team. Because you know what? I'll say this. I know they're facing some really tough arms, but like, I just need to get talked off the ledge a little bit. But it's like, this is what they're going to face in the postseason. Like, this is kind of what you have to do in the postseason to win games. You're going to have to find ways to crack the armor here. And to be fair, I knew this was coming. I seen it coming. And I just said one win. If they find a way to win tomorrow, I'm good. Boy, were we criticized for that one. People hated our guts. This team's good enough to win every series. You guys got, get your head out of your ass. You watched the White Sox play three games and you guys thought you were the big bad wolves. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of my son when he goes out there and he plays with a 7-year-old brother and he's out there playing basketball and he's dominating him and he thinks, oh yeah, I'm going to the NBA. I'm like, oh, you are? Let's go down to the city, brother, and let's go play some basketball. Let's see if you still think you're good. Because at some point you realize you're not. I'm starting to wonder if this offense isn't what we think it is. But I'm going to take a chill pill, and we're all going to relax, and maybe, just maybe, it'll be fine.
They weren't as good as they looked against the White Sox. They're not as bad as they looked the last 2 days against the Mariners. They're somewhere in the middle. Let's see how they look against the Angels for three games at Great American Ballpark this weekend.
That's fair. All right. That'll get me through the night. I'll wake up tomorrow and I'll feel better about myself. But boy, I need some offensive production tomorrow. I just need a little bit, you know? I don't want to hear about hard hit balls tomorrow, okay? I don't care if they hit 900 hard hit balls, which I know that means they probably got hits, but I'm just saying, I don't want to hear it. I'm done with it. I just wanted to temper it and we'll move on to the next day. I you know what? I'm a hard hit ball kind of guy. I like hard hit balls, but I'm done listening to it. I have to hear about how the Reds, they've got 20 hard hit balls tonight and the Mariners only got two. Sweet. That's great. I'm glad that works out for us. All right, Reds MILB. There was something that good happened in Louisville. Tell them about it.
Yeah, something good did happen. Unfortunately, Tony Santion gave up 4 runs in the bottom of the 9th as the Iowa Cubs walked off the bats. Louisville falls to 7-9 on the season. They lose 8-7. But Mike Ford, 3-for-5, hit 2 home runs. He's now got 5 already. Reese Hines, he's really struggling, 0-for-4, 3 strikeouts. He's hitting .143 with a .548 OPS through the first 16 games. Connor Capel, he walked twice, stole a base. Ian Jabeau, another tough outing for him on his rehab assignment. He gave up a run, walked 2. He's now allowed 5 earned runs in 2 1/3 innings during his rehab assignment with the Bats. He did not allow a run in either of his 2 appearances with the Dayton Dragons before that. Blake Dunn, again, did not play. He has not started a game since April 8th. He's only or April 10th. He's only pinch ran twice. Double A, Chattanooga, they lost to Biloxi 3-1. Lookouts had their three-game win streak snapped. They fall to 3-6 on the year. Not a whole lot going on this one. One positive, Andrew Moore. He was the reliever, part of the return for the Luis Castillo. He was, I think he had 5 earned runs his last time out, but pitched pretty well today through 2 shutout innings. Austin Hendrick 0-4 with 2 strikeouts. And then down to Dayton, the Dayton Dragons, they made a lot of really good defensive plays in this one. I watched a little bit of the game, saw some of the highlights. Just a really fun team. They're in town all week, so if you are able, I would highly recommend you get up to a Dayton Dragons game this week. They beat Fort Wayne 4-1. They improved to 5-5 on the year. Cam Colliery already has 3 home runs. Hit his 3rd home run tonight for the Dragons. Sal Stewart walked twice. Bryce Hubbard, this was the Reds' 2022 third-round pick. Pitched really well. 5 innings, just gave up 1 run, 3 hits, struck out 6. He's got an even 2 ERA through his first 2 starts with the Dayton Dragons. He reached the Dragons for the first time on opening day this season. And then Daytona, they won as well. They won 5-2 over Bradenton. Carlos Sanchez was 2-for-4. Ricardo Cabrera doubled, walked twice. Good night for him. Alfredo Duno 0-for-3 with a walk. Connor Burns, he had a grand slam in this one. He's got his 2nd home run of the year. The only downside, Eastmith Pineda, 0-for-4. He's the Reds' number 28 prospect, hitting just 121 with a 292 OPS through the Tortugas' first 10 games. All right, Wednesday, 4-10 game. Don't get a whole lot of those. Reds going up against another really good right-handed pitcher, Bryce Miller, 1.96 ERA. He gave up 4 earned runs in his first start, but he's been really dominant over his last 2. Did not allow a earned run over his last 2 starts. 7 innings, no runs against the Milwaukee Brewers. 6 1/3, no earned runs against the Chicago Cubs. This guy was a top 100 prospect when he entered baseball in 2023. This guy only made 33 minor league starts before getting called up, and he's been really good. And he's another Mariners pitcher that doesn't walk batters. He had a 1.78 walks per 9 in his rookie season last year. Did make a start against the Reds last year on September 5th. Went 5 innings. Reds did get 7 hits off him. 1 run. He walked 1 and struck out 2. Reds actually won that game 7-6. Benson was 1-for-2. De La Cruz 1-for-3. CES 1-for-2. Fraley 1-for-1 with a double. And then Andrew Abbott for the Reds. Coming off a really good start against the White Sox. 7 innings. Just gave up 1 run. No walks. Struck out 3. Abbott has never faced the Mariners. The only active batter to face him is Luis Urias, who's 0-for-1 with a walk, who will probably be in the lineup. He's usually a platoon player for the Seattle Mariners. All right, well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all your support. If you've not yet subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever you listen to this podcast, make sure you do that right now. New podcast the morning after every single game. All 162 games always available bright and early the next morning for you. If you could, leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this podcast. That would help us as well. But most importantly, tell a Reds fan about Chatterbox Reds. I'm sure there's still some Reds fans that don't know about what we do here every day, so we would really appreciate if you were able to do that. Of course, be sure to check out Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, Off the Bench, our daily Cincinnati sports show and more, 10 a.m. to noon, and then the Kenner and Kev simulcast of their radio show on 1410 Wing AM in Dayton is available 3 to 5 p.m. So lots of great content every day for you on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. You can subscribe there as well. You hit the bell in the top right corner. That'll turn on notifications so you're notified anytime that Chatterbox Reds goes live, but also any of the other Chatterbox Sports programming. Well, hope that you have a fantastic Wednesday. Hopefully the Reds can find a way to get out of Seattle with a win. We'll talk about it on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube around 6:30 or so. And then, of course, it'll be in your podcast feed on Thursday morning. Go Reds!